Steady in the boat. Steady in the boat.
I'm absurd.
Stop piggybacking on what you said!
Good students and damn fine journalists. That's what we are here at Alligator Sports.
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Monday, September 27th. I'm your host, Kyle Maestri. I have nothing creative to say at the beginning of this. I've really done Adam not so proud here, but I have two football writers with me, Anthony Chang.
What's up, guys?
And Tyler Jett.
What's up? Clearly, we don't have anything creative to say either, so don't feel too bad.
Uncreative Monday, I guess.
Creatively bankrupt Monday.
All my creativity was zapped out over the weekend. Some new stuff to hit before we get into a little bit of dissecting the Kentucky game. Chris Rainey, who was suspended, I don't know if I want to use the term suspended, indefinitely removed from the team. I don't know how we technically want to refer to him. But with the aggravated stalking charge, which was a felony at the time, his charge has been reduced to a misdemeanor, and he reached a plea agreement. The charge will be dropped if he meets the following requirements. He, one, stays out of trouble for 6 months. Two, no hostile contact with the alleged victim. Three, must undergo counseling. And four, my favorite, either donate money to a domestic violence center or perform 10 hours of community service. I can't imagine Chris Rainey has a lot of fun sitting around. He's a college kid just like the rest of us, presumably. So I'm going to say he probably goes 10 hours of community service on that. But if he does those four things, charges will be dropped, and I assume he'll be back with the team at some point this season. Somebody asked today in interviews, asked Coach Meyer if there's any chance he could be back for the Alabama game. He said 100% no. Are you guys surprised by that, or did you expect it to be a long process?
I'm a little surprised just because I expected that once this happened, he would be able to play that week, especially if it was before the Alabama game. So I'm a little bit surprised that he jumped the gun and already counted him out for the game before the news came out. So yeah, that's my take on it.
Yeah, I mean, I assume Meyer obviously heard this news before anybody asked it, so he is fully aware of that. I would be more curious if he hadn't known that news and then said 100% no and then found out about the news. He'd pretty much be stuck and, well, I can't go back on my word. So I guess that would be an interesting dynamic from it, but I'm not really that surprised from it. I guess the one question I have from this whole thing is, what's the time frame when he has to get all this done? Does anybody know?
Good question. I don't know. I obviously stayed out of trouble for 6 months. I think if there's hostile contact or if he doesn't complete counseling, like, I guess that's like a long-term thing that has to get done. I don't know how fast he has to do any of this, but, I mean, as we saw with Justin Doe, just because you get in trouble once or twice and you have a way out doesn't necessarily mean you're going to take it. So, you know, I think Meyer would probably like to see Rainey complete all of these things before he lets him back with the team.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think he would have to do it almost, you know, as soon as possible, right, just because I'm sure they want to see that done before, you know, he comes back on the team and all that's taken care of.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people who aren't familiar with Florida or Chris Rainey maybe were thinking, oh, of course, he'll be suspended right up until the Alabama game, the biggest game of the year, and then he'll be let back. But, I mean, A, Chris Rainey, not exactly like one of their top players, I don't think. So it's not a situation where Meyer's going to try to, you know, get him in any way that he can. And two, it's not like it was an off-season offense and they handpicked the games they were going to suspend him for. You know, like it all kind of happened and they had to react to it and he missed a couple games. But, I mean, I think he could still miss two or three, four more games. Like, I don't know.
So do you think that this, maybe just because it's Chris Rainey, if it was like Jeff Demps or a better player, you think he'd be back for Bama already?
I don't know if there's anyone on this team this year that I would say that about. But I think if, like, this happened to Spikes or Harbin or somebody like that, or Dunlap, yeah. He'd be back the next week. You know, I think they're more eager to get those guys back on the field. All right, so now that we're done with the court section of the show, we'll move into the Kentucky section of the show. Florida won 48-14 this weekend. Big showing from the offense, finally. Gators fans got a nice taste of what this offense can look like with a little more balance at home. First question I want to ask you guys is, did John Brantley really show you guys something that you hadn't seen from him and how much faith you have going forward? He threw for 240-something yards, a career high, and really spread the ball around better than he has in any of the previous games.
I think the thing I took out of it most of all was the play calling. I think that's what allowed him to get those stats. He had already been, you know, throwing pretty well on third down. He got a couple of those completions against Tennessee. He had been spreading the ball around pretty well. I think most of it was just came out of play calling to me.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, actually. the game before Tennessee game, he threw 23 times against 49 running plays. It's kind of, well, we talked about it plenty of times now at this point. But, like, when he gets a chance to throw, he's looked pretty decent, with the exception of the Miami-Ohio game. But that, like we've said before, that's kind of an outlier. You can't really take that into account when there's so many bad fumbles and everyone was just out of sync. So I kind of like the way he's been throwing the ball. And I thought it was interesting that early in the game, it looked like the play calling was better than it was later in the second half. And they kind of said after the fact that the play calling was scripted early in the game. And I think that had a big factor with it, was they didn't have to do too much thinking on their toes, and they stayed balanced early. I think that was a big effect.
Yeah, and they were a lot less predictable, especially on first down. Against Tennessee, they ran it 22 times and passed 7 on first down. They threw it on 8 first downs alone in the first quarter, which I know you have to have 8 first downs in the first quarter to be able to do that, mm-hmm. or obviously more in this scenario. But clearly, Adazio was much more willing to throw the ball early on first and second down, which, you know, helped keep them out of those third and long situations, which they converted a lot against Tennessee.
And another thing I noticed was that early on, they had Brantley rolling out a lot out of the pocket, and he looked pretty comfortable doing that. So maybe you see that against Bama, I don't know, but he did look pretty good rolling out of the pocket and, you know, throwing on the run.
Yeah, they did that a lot early in the game, yeah. and they kind of got away. They didn't do it much after the first quarter, which I thought was interesting. And I thought it was really effective as well. I don't know why they didn't keep doing that.
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of things they did well in the first quarter that they kind of went away from as the game went on. One of those guys I'm talking about is Andre DeBose, who caught 4 passes for 36 yards, the first and only catches of his career so far, and they all came right in the first quarter, and including the first play of the game, he caught a 14-yard pass. So why, I guess the question is, why script all these plays for him right away off of that and then just not go back to him for the rest of the game? Anybody think they know any thinking that might be going on there? Because I was really confused by that.
I mean, I kind of have a theory that Andre DeBose just doesn't know that many plays.
Uh-huh.
Because you look at it, and I think they had this one route they ran, and I've drawn it up for anybody that will look at me because I'm so excited that I figured this out. But they ran one route 4 times the first quarter to him. The first was the first play of the game. It's a little out route. Frankie Hammond, who's on the outside, ran an end route, kind of as a pick, almost ran as a pick. And DeBose got in free space and ran up 14 yards. Kentucky didn't react to it well the first time. They ran it again. As soon as he got the ball, there were 3 Kentucky defenders on him. He ended up getting 8 yards. They ran it 2 more times, and both those times, they jumped the route beforehand. So that play was gone. They ran 2 other plays to him. One was a wide receiver screen, and one was a 3-yard drag route across the middle. So I just don't know if he knows that many plays. We saw, I think it was in South Florida game, when they had him run a deep ball, and he cut inside, and Brantley threw it outside. And we asked after the fact, was that just an option route, or was he just, what happened? And Zach Kazani, the wide receivers coach, said he just ran the wrong route. So, I mean, I just don't think he knows the routes that well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally buy that. And Urban, I don't know, Urban seems to be upset with him, or definitely not pleased. Well, after the game, like he said, yeah, it was on purpose. We got him the ball early on purpose. That was scripted, like, to go to him. And then he said, immediately following that, like, he had a good week of practice. That's why he got the ball. And if he doesn't do that again this week, we're not going to use him at all next week. He took a shot at him later in the press conference, totally unprompted, when he was saying, like, yeah, our guys didn't, like, we're lining up in the wrong place. Like, Andre DeBose, you know, he's supposed to line up on the right. Now he does, where he used to line up on the left. Like, he just doesn't seem real happy with the kid. And I think DeBose had some quote where it was like, yeah, I worked real hard in practice to try to get down, like, that one play or two play. Like, I definitely kind of buy Tyler's thing. I think he's really having trouble learning the playbook or where he's supposed to be.
My thing is, if that's the case, I do agree with you guys. If that's the case, if you're a coach, why are you switching roles with him? Like, why are you putting him in a new position to learn something else when he can't even grasp his own position that he's been in for, I guess, 2 years now that he's been trying to learn? I don't understand why they're
my only theory with that would be that maybe the position they're trying to get him at, kind of that quote-unquote Percy position, was just too complex for him, and so maybe they wanted to start weaning him off. And, like, this is based on the fact that they said, well, he's going to play on the outside receiver now. Maybe I thought maybe that'd be a little bit more simple, just a traditional pass catcher role. But then, sure enough, in the game, he lines up in the slot again. So I don't know, and I don't pretend to know what's going on with Andre DeBose, I mean, as far as that's concerned.
The coaches, Urban Meyer, isn't honest enough with us to know any of this, any of the answers to any of these questions, because somebody asked him, is Andre DeBose going to move back into the slot now that Chris Rainey is suspended? And Urban Meyer's like, no, definitely not. Like, Andre DeBose is an outside guy. That's where he's best at. That's where we're going to use him. We like him back, giving us depth in that rotation with Deontay Thompson. And then, of course, he comes right out, lines up in the slot. So I don't know how this coaching staff's thinking, because they just lie to us all the time. That's basically my feeling. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah.
But DeBose was part of a receiving core that really had a good game as far from top to bottom. You had Deontay Thompson led the team in catches and yards. Carl Moore had 70-plus yards. Four catches all came on third and long for first down conversions. Marius Hines, I think, caught two or three balls, including a 42-yarder from Trey Burton, oddly enough, who we'll get to in a second here. Really just they're probably their best performance of the year. What did you guys see out of them that we hadn't seen the first couple games?
Yeah, I agree with you, Kyle. I think that Carl Moore actually showed a lot over these past two games. In the first game, I remember he didn't throw the ball his way, I guess, a lot, but I came out of that game saying, you know, this guy's maybe not as good as advertised. He's not going to be productive. But he has shown a lot. He's gotten a lot of big third down catches, made a lot of nice catches over the middle where it's maybe not a well-thrown pass, but he gets, you know, he uses his height to get that ball. Deontay dropped one deep ball, but other than that, he led the team in receptions, I think, tied with Trey Burton. So I think the receivers looked good, and it's something they can build off going into Alabama.
Yeah, I think Carl Moore has looked like the best receiver the last 2 weeks. He's come up clutch in the most important situations, the third down situations. He's catching the ball really well. He's a tall receiver. He can jump. He used that a couple of times when Brantley overthrew him. He's made a bunch of acrobatic catches the last couple of games. Deontay, actually, he impressed me as well. He made a couple of big plays, and he actually caught the ball with his hands. Like, even in the Miami-Ohio game, when he was clearly the number one receiver, if you watch replays of that, a lot of those balls hit his chest before it hit his hands. And so it was good for Gators fans to be able to see Deontay catch it with his hands. As far as dropping the ball, you know he's going to drop one. I feel like the Gators should almost do is the first play of the game, just throw it really hard at Deontay and make him drop it and be like, all right, now that's gone. We knew it was going to happen. That's out of the way.
Yeah.
Now let's just go on from there. Because you know he's going to drop one. But, like, I don't know. He did impress me, though, except for that drop.
Yeah,
Saturday.
I feel like they finally got some yards after the catch. Again, I'm really bad at my job. I don't do any research or anything like that. But if I were to go back at the tape, I would imagine I'd find that their yards after the catch this week was by far the most they had after any game. There were multiple plays where Deontay caught a ball and really turned it upfield. Amarius Hines had a catch and run. So I was more impressed with them getting the ball and then doing something with it rather than just catching and going down like they had been the previous 3 weeks or so.
I was going to say, I think that's another product of the play calling. I think that when you throw it downfield, you get them a little behind the second level of the defense, they're going to have more room to run after the catch. If you're throwing a five-yard pass over the middle, it's hard to find space.
Right. I mean, on Wednesday, I think in practice, or before practice, someone asked Carl Moore about the yards after catch, and he said, well, to get yards after catch, you have to be in a position to get yards after catch, which I thought was very interesting, and basically saying, you know, a lot of these catches, as soon as I'm in the air catching it and then getting hit, I can't do anything about it.
Right.
And I think there was a lot of truth to that.
Yeah, I think that's fair, definitely. Does it alarm you guys that we're four games in, their longest pass play of the year is 30 yards, which came in this last game to Deontay Thompson? It's also the only play of more than 25 yards that they've had in the passing game this year.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty bad. That's pretty bad for the Florida offense. Although, I mean, you could say, you know, the first game they had, like, that deep pass to Deontay where he dropped over the shoulder. That was one. Another one where he dropped last game. Brantley's getting them there. Those are two really nice passes. It's just they need to catch those balls. And I guess they've been saying a deep throw is Deontay, but Deontay can't catch any deep balls. So I think that's the problem right there.
Right. I mean, they really don't take a whole lot of shots downfield either. It's one of those situations where Deontay's dropped two passes, but how many other deep balls have they really thrown this year? I remember the first game to Miami, Ohio, they did throw a deep ball to Carl Moore, but it was ended up out of bounds. It wasn't a great throw. But yeah, I mean, if you're not taking, I would think that they should probably take about four or five long shots a game, with the thought being we'll probably get two or three with the athletes we have, but they're really only doing one or two a game.
Right. Yeah, and considering how much faith they have in the offensive line, I'm surprised they don't throw the ball further downfield, because you could make an argument, well, if the line's not blocking, there's not enough time for plays to develop, but that shouldn't be the case with this team. So I don't really know why they don't throw the ball downfield more, but at some point I feel like that's going to have to be put into the offense. And one thing I wanted to say about Deontay, too, is that the drop Tyler's talking about was in the back of the end zone, and it looked like the defender kind of may have, like, pushed him a little bit. But what I want to say about Deontay is that if you're, like, the number one receiver and you're supposed to be a guy who's really good and going to play in the NFL and highly recruited and stuff, you have to make plays like that. And it's not even that every once in a while he doesn't make a play like that. He never makes a difficult play. Like, how good are you as a receiver if you're catching the ball when you're wide open, picking up 5 yards and then getting tackled every time? He's not extending plays after that. He's not doing anything. He once he gets behind the defense, if there's any contact at all, I feel like he can't come up with the football. And that's really, like, bad for a quarterback, knowing that every time I throw to this guy, if there's any kind, he can't make a play on the ball for me, you know?
Right, and what's interesting is that Dazio always says, we build our offense around our players, but they're putting Deontay, they're thrusting him into the number one role, and I would agree with you, based on his skill set, he's a fast guy, but can't really make catches in traffic that well. I feel like he would thrive more as the number two guy, or maybe even the slot guy, someone that doesn't have a lot of attention on him,
mm-hmm.
and they're not doing that. They're putting him in the number one spot, where he clearly hasn't been able to do well in 2 years, really.
I think they're kind of forced to put him in that role, because they really don't, I mean, they have Carl Moore, but other than that, I mean, who are you going to put the number one spot?
I would just put Carl. I'd put Carl Moore in the number one spot. I just think he's the best receiver they have.
Right, I mean, I don't know, but supposedly Deontay is like the best deep threat. Everybody says he's the best deep threat on the team, but unless he completely burns a guy, runs wide open down the field, and then even then there's a 50-50 chance that he's going to drop the ball if it's thrown over his shoulder, you know? So I just don't... He can get open, like relatively open, but he doesn't make plays that you need to make if you're going to be the best receiver on the team, you know? I mean, we can sit here and make excuses for him all day, but... he's getting the benefit of the doubt that other great receivers don't need, you know? Like, you don't have to make these excuses for Julio Jones or A.J. Green or guys like that, Alshon Jeffrey. Like, those guys make these plays. Mm-hmm. He just doesn't as the Gators' number one.
Yeah, he's been getting open. He's just not finishing them. He's not
right.
He's not catching the pass. It's put there nicely. He's just not catching it, so.
Yeah, I don't really know what his deal is, but, I mean, I think they need the passing game to be reliable, so this can't be a flash in the pan for them if they're going to win a lot of games because... I think it's going to be too easy when the play calling gets predictable for teams to key in on that run game. Teams with good defenses anyway, like Alabama and South mm-hmm. Carolina and stuff like that. Speaking of Alabama, they played Arkansas this weekend and really, like, Edge just barely got away with a victory in Fayetteville. Did you guys see anything from that game? Or I know we watched a little bit before we had to cover the game. That made you think Alabama maybe not as good as we think or Florida's better than we think? Did your opinion on the game, the impending game, change after this weekend's games?
Not really. I mean, I think that every team is going to play those kind of close games. It's not like Arkansas is an unranked team and all that. I mean, it was against, I guess, a top 15 team, maybe a top 10 team at this point.
Top 10.
Top 10 team on the road. So, I mean, it was impressive that they even pulled it out. They were down by 13 points, came back, imposed their will, and won the game on the road. I mean, I think that was impressive.
I would say, I think going into the season, the big thing with Alabama was they're replacing all the starters on defense. How are they going to react? And the defense did not look good early in that game. Arkansas got off to a very good start. Obviously, bottom line is who wins the game. Alabama won the game on the road. That's impressive against a record crowd in Arkansas. But to me, watching that game, I got more of a sense that Arkansas lost that game than Alabama won that. Ryan Mallett really choked down the line. And it's kind of one of those things that I read. I think Clay Travis, a writer for Fan House, he wrote a column on the game and kind of talked about how Arkansas hadn't had a big game like this in 40 years. And they got into a situation where they were winning in the big game and just didn't know how to handle it, is what he thought. And I kind of agree with that. They're a team that's not used to being a national title contender. And in that game, they became a national title contender at halftime.
Mm-hmm.
They had a lead against the number one team in the nation. They were looking sharp. All of a sudden, they just collapsed, and that's kind of my opinion of it. Does it change my opinion of the Florida-Alabama game? A little bit, in that now I kind of go into it thinking that the key is going to be Florida's offense versus Alabama's defense. Both are kind of the variables, and it's going to be interesting to see who emerges out of that battle, and that's probably going to be the key to the win.
Do you think that Florida change in your guys' mind at all based on what they did against Kentucky? Like, for me, I think a little bit. I went from thinking, all right, Florida's really going to get beat bad, and watching them come out against Kentucky, I mean, I think they showed something on offense that they hadn't to this point that would make me believe maybe they could put up points on this team.
I think somewhat, but I think it could also be false hope just mm-hmm. because Trey Burton scored all the offensive touchdowns, and that is not going to happen. Like, he's not going to be able to do that against Alabama. They're not going to be able to just put him on the 10-yard line and have him run out of the Wildcat, have a direct snap, and weave through Alabama's defense into the end zone. They're not going to let a freshman do that. Right. So they're going to actually have to make plays in the red zone, and that still did not happen against Kentucky. So, I mean, that's one thing I still wonder about.
Yeah, I mean, well, for the first part is that they got down in the red zone every time without Trey, really. All those touchdowns were down. 11 yards was the longest touchdown he had, which means that the offense got down to the 11-yard line. But it still didn't really change my opinion too much, more so because of the fact that Kentucky, I think, was an incredibly overrated team going into this.
Mm-hmm.
They hadn't played anybody good yet. They were 3-0. But look at Kentucky traditionally, and I wrote an article about this last week. In the last 5 years, every game before SEC play started, their offense was averaging like 37 points, and they were undefeated. And then after those games, their offense was averaging like 22 points, and they were barely a 500 team. So I didn't come into it really thinking Kentucky was a good team, and that's really what I got out of it.
Yeah, just beating up on a bad team. I can definitely see that, and that's a fair point. All right, let's get into the Trey Burton part of this show. Trey Burton, who, if you didn't know the name before this game, you definitely do now. He's a national name, I would say, after this game. Scored 6 touchdowns. He had runs of, I think, 11, 10, 9, 7, and 3, not necessarily in that order. An 11-yard receiving touchdown. He had one pass for 42 yards out of the Wildcats. So, I mean, he just put up video game numbers pretty much against Kentucky. I know nobody saw this coming, but how surprised were you on a scale of 1 to 10 what Trey Burton did on Saturday?
I guess I was surprised he got 6 touchdowns, but if you look at it over the past 3 games, every time they put him in the goal line, he scores, and they mm-hmm. just put him, and every time they got to the goal line, they would put him in, and that's just the result of it, I guess.
So scale of 1 to 10, where are you at?
2. You knew that was happening?
No, I didn't know that was happening, but like I think it's just a matter of how they used him. Right. They basically didn't give Brantley a chance to man the offense in the red zone. They put Burn in every single time. Mm-hmm. So I think, I don't know why they did that. Maybe because it was working, or they wanted to open that kind of aspect of the offense up before Alabama's game to kind of give them something to prepare for. I don't know what it was, but they used him in that scenario, and I think that's just the result of how they use Burton.
Okay, my surprise level, I would say, is at least a 9 because he scored 6 touchdowns in one game. I think the reason they used him so much, like they're using him so much in the red zone, is I feel like the option can be such a good play in the red zone for your running attack. If you have a quarterback that can run, and all of a sudden you have to respect that, that's two. They can run left or right on any given play, and you really, as a defense, that's just much tougher, more tough to defend. And so I think that's really good for Florida to be able to finally institute that back in their offense since losing Tebow. Obviously, Brantley wasn't going to do it. Finally, Brantley said, like, I'm not really an option quarterback. All preseason, the talk was, he's deceptively good as a runner. The writer next to me, I'm not going to say who his name is, but he said after one of Brantley's scrambles, he looked like a woman out there. So I'm just going to say, like, he's not a good runner. And I think adding Burton was a real good impact. And I think today on the radio, someone was talking about, he's like, this kid was a 3-star recruit, and he scored 6 right. touchdowns. And the thing that I think Trey really reminds me of is kind of like one of those small school kids who comes into a school and does great and just balls out at some small school, and the whole talk is, how does this kid not get an offer? It was like that because he's a good player who was underrated by scouts, except that he did get an offer from a big school.
Yeah, I mean, I was shocked pretty much. I think Trey Burton is a good Wildcat quarterback based on what we've seen so far. Like, he does, his vision seems to be really good. He picks the right hole. He doesn't always keep it inside or always bounce it outside. Like, he really does a good job reacting to the defense and finishing off his runs too. He's had a few touchdowns where he's had to put his helmet down and pick up those last couple yards, and he does it extremely well. So I think he can be effective, but I mean, obviously 5 touchdowns on 5 carries is absolutely ridiculous. So I was definitely shocked, but yeah, go ahead.
I was surprised, but I want to make the point again and reiterate it. I was surprised by the number of touchdowns he got, but I think I was more surprised to the fact that they put him in every single time on the goal line and didn't give Brantley an opportunity to make a play. Because if you're going to put somebody in like that and just tell them to run up the middle after a direct snap from like a 5-yard line, I mean, it's not shocking that he scores from the 5-yard line on a run, you know what I mean? It's the way that they used them. They used them every single time when they got down there.
I agree with you to a degree, but I do think it's a little overblown of, like, the whole, why don't they use Trey Burton all the time? Like, why'd they use him so much more? I kind of don't think they used him that much more. It's just that he was successful on every single play somehow. You know what I'm saying? Like, if 2 of those times he gets stuffed or he only picks up 4, he picks up half the distance instead of going for 10, 9, 11, whatever, then Brantley comes back in and right. we see a pass or something like that. But it was just astounding that literally every time he ran the ball, he ran for a touchdown. Like, I just don't, you can't repeat that. And we've seen him be involved either catching a pass that goes for 2 yards or a run that gets stuffed a little bit. I mean, he's had some success, yeah. but I don't think they used him that much more than usual.
And also, Kentucky's defense was terrible. Yeah, like, he didn't make good. Like an amazing play where he was like breaking 3 tackles against the end zone. He would roll out and there'd be wide open on the end. And
you'd well, there were a couple times. Yeah.
After 4 touchdowns, you'd be like, okay, you would think that they would have a spy on this guy or something like that. But Kentucky's defense was letting him run wild out there.
So. Right, and I figured this out after about 2 touchdowns. And if I'm playing football, I'd be able to figure this out hopefully sooner. Right. But he ran right every single time. Yeah, every single time was right. And that last touchdown was a naked bootleg to the right. Mm-hmm. And there was no Kentucky defender out there. A defensive back came out there to try to tackle him. But as a defense, how do you not key on the guy who has 5 touchdowns at that point in the game?
Well, I'll admit that it would have taken at least a few more touchdowns for me to figure that out, but you're 100% right now that I think about it. And going back even beyond this game, has he ran left on a touchdown run yet?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, against Miami, Ohio, his first touchdown was left.
Yes. Okay. Because I seem to remember a lot him going right.
Well, yeah. Maybe every... because he feels maybe to keep open the pass option. I don't know.
Yeah,
because
he's a righty,
so I don't know.
Well, they've all been read option plays, but yeah, I guess I can see what you're saying. Maybe it's because the running back's always to his right.
Yeah,
I don't know, huh? Well, that's
how about that?
That's something to keep an eye on. I'm sure Nick Saban.
Wonder if Nick Saban can figure that one out
before the three of us got together and thought about this. But yeah, so Trey Burton, just huge name. But I mean, the question with all the stuff we're talking about, really, for the first four games, and with this, is can he be effective down the road in big games? Like, how much do you expect Trey Burton to be able to contribute? He obviously won't be able to repeat this performance, but is he a weapon now for this team?
Yeah, he definitely is. Like, anytime you can get a quarterback in there that can break tackles, he can throw the ball, he provides, you know, a certain dynamic to that offense. He can line up as a tight end or a fullback, catch passes. That's a great tool to have, especially on offense that's lacking playmakers. So I think he will be a weapon, but if you use him every single time in the goal line, I think after a while it might get something that, you know, defense can stop. I think they have to pick their spots a little better. So.
Yeah, this isn't particularly new territory for Florida, though. In 06, they did kind of have the same dynamic with Tebow, and the fact that Tebow ran the ball a lot when he got in there, but there were occasionally when he'd throw it. And I feel like with Burton, if Florida's playing Alabama and they put Troy Burton in, the one thing I'm wondering is, would they dare throw the ball with him the first time he got out there? Because you know after six touchdowns, everyone's going to be keying on him running. You do the thing that I think Tebow did against Kentucky in 06, where he took a step forward and then came back and then
LSU.
Threw it.
I think it was LSU.
LSU did the jump pass. Okay. Kentucky, I think, it was the one where he kind of took a step forward, everyone kind of sucked up, he went back and then threw it. Mm-hmm. Do you think Florida would be daring enough to let him throw it the first time he went out there?
I've seen Trey Burton throw a football. It's not the prettiest thing I've ever seen.
That's why it would be very daring if they did
it. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Tebow is obviously a way, way better thrower than Burton. I do agree that, like, the element of surprise would be like something that you try to use, but I mean, I don't know, maybe you try it out there and tell him, look, just only throw it if he's wide open. If the guy's wide open, let him have it, but if not, we don't want to take a chance of you throwing into coverage.
Yeah, I think if you're a defense, you load the box. Like, anytime he comes into the game, you put 7-8 in the box and mm-hmm. just make him throw the ball at that point. So
yeah, I don't know, that'd be interesting. Do you think Florida would do that?
I feel like they would. I think Florida would do it one time. I mean, first play, I think it'd be a smart play the first play. I know he's not a good thrower, but it's at least worth a shot because you know the whole talk the entire time is going to be the fact that he scored six touchdowns, five of them rushing, one of them receiving.
I think that's risky to do it the first play just because he goes out there first quarter, throws a pick. It's just like, why are you letting this guy throw the ball, you know, against Alabama's defense when he's thrown one, I guess, one pass in his whole career, and it was to a wide-open receiver.
Right. I mean, I think the goal would be, obviously, to get another wide-open receiver. Yeah. So I think you could tell. Trey Burton, the thing I also want to talk about him with him, and this kind of applies to this type of situation, is he's such, like, an accountable, reliable player. Like, you hear the coaches talk about that a lot. It gets really overused about who's accountable. And, like, DeAndre Thompson is not reliable and accountable because he can't catch the ball every time it's thrown to him. Or Emmanuel Moody, maybe not as reliable and accountable because he's going to drop a pitch every once in a while. Like, Trey Burton doesn't seem to go out there and screw something up. You know, I know he had to drop pass in the flat. It wasn't the easiest catch to make. He probably should have made it. But he's never going out there and putting your team at, like, a disadvantage. Everything that he's asked to do, if he's playing fullback, if he's playing tight end, if he's playing quarterback, I haven't seen him make a big mistake yet, you know? And I think that's important, and that's why they give him so much to do, because maybe you could tell him against Alabama, only throw it if you're there wide open, and they can trust him to do that, whereas some guys, you don't want to put that decision in their hand, you know?
I agree, but you have to remember, he's still a true freshman. The guy is, like, he has, what, four games under his belt at this mm-hmm. point? One of them was against Miami, Ohio, another one's against USF. I guess one was at Tennessee, Kentucky. He's never seen a defense like Alabama.
Right.
He's never played at a place like Alabama. He's still 18, 19 years old, so, like, it's hard to – I mean, I would agree to you to a certain extent, but you can't put everything on him, you know what I mean?
Well, I don't think you would put everything on him. You're not putting your whole game plan around him, but I would put – I mean, one play or two plays isn't everything on him. I mean, he had five runs last game. Again, that's not putting – the key of the offense wasn't Trey Burton. The key was getting down at the goal line, and then he had five runs, four or five touchdowns. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's way more of a burden on John Brantley than there was Trey Burton in that game.
Yeah, but if you're getting to the point where you're like, okay, either you can pass on this play if the guy's open, you could run, or you could, you know, hand it off to somebody. Like, that's a lot to – for. That's what
– Oh, phone's ringing in the office. All right, good. Our secretary got that.
Continue.
Yeah.
Proceed.
That's a lot for a freshman to absorb, I think. Like, it's hard to put that throwing aspect in there.
Some guys are smart and some guys aren't. That's kind of how I feel about
it.
Like, I feel like there's like a freshman component, whatever. Like, you need obviously, the more experience you have with something, the better you're going to be at it just naturally without, you know, overthinking or having to worry too much about it. But, I mean, some guys just pick stuff up faster than others. Trey Burton's obviously really smart and can handle learning different plays. He's a guy who, you know, they ask him, like, how'd you have the time to learn all these positions? He's like, well, I play quarterback, so you have to know where everybody is anyway, so I just know where everyone's supposed to be on every play. And, you know, Andre DeBose can't even line up on the right side of the formation, according to Urban Meyer, after 2 years on campus. So, I don't know. It's just, like, there's some guys that get it and some guys that don't. He just seems to be like a guy that gets it.
Yeah, well, Andre DeBose can run a 3-yard out route pretty well. That's what I figured out. But the interesting about DeBose is that Meyer's always talking about, well, he's a freshman. He's been here for 2 years.
Yeah, he's not
Burton's
really
been here
freshman.
For like a month and a half, and he knows every position on offense.
Right.
Well, and basketball, apparently, too, as we learned today, is when he played basketball, he played all five positions.
Of course, because that's just the kind of guy Trey Burton is. But I also feel really good for Trey Burton because he's a kid who Tyler talked about. He's a 3-star, so how did this happen? He's a kid who came to every Florida game last year and sat in the bleachers. Like, he wanted Florida more than Florida wanted him. I think we all can agree on that. So it's really cool to kind of see him go out. You know, you get all these 5-stars that come in, and they turn out to be divas. They transfer. They demand playing time. They cry about stuff. You know, Pouncey always says this about Burton. He just shuts his mouth, shows up, does what the coaches ask him to do. Clearly just wants to be able to contribute any way that he can. Found a way to get on the field and do that, and now he had a breakout game. So you got to feel good for a kid like that.
Right. He was on the kickoff team, too. This is your backup quarterback who you were throwing on the kickoff team because he wanted to go out there and make tackles, which I think is interesting. I don't think he's going to be on the kickoff team anymore.
No, they pulled him from the starting kickoff team today. So
that must have been disappointing for him.
One less thing that Trey Burton will be doing against Alabama on Saturday. Okay. With that, we're going to get into our major rights and our Juan D. Pierre-Louise, our end of the week, or I guess our beginning of the week awards this time.
Yeah.
We'll do our Gator Guarantees at the end of the week. We'll start with Juan D.'s, and we'll end on a positive. We'll go the reverse Adam on this one. So I'll start with my Juan D. I'm going to give it to Steve Spurrier, the South Carolina Gamecocks, who I had a lot of faith in. I thought for sure they were going to go into Auburn. Beat the Tigers. I always want to call them the War Eagles. It's not fair. They have two mascots. They should win every game. But anyway, I thought they were going to go in there, hand them a loss, walk out. It seemed to be playing out like that for most of the game. Then they kind of collapsed, gave it away in the fourth quarter. And the reason why I include Steve Spurrier in this is because he benched Steven Garcia, who was playing pretty well. Like, his stat line is really good, but I guess he fumbled on consecutive possessions. One of them was trying to pick up like an extra yard for a first down or something. And Spurrier, who just hates poor Steven Garcia, just pulled him for a freshman who went on to throw two interceptions on his only two drives. So you guys get my Wandy. I'm upset you didn't pull out the win. Spurrier, I'm very upset with you for just freaking out and not staying calm under pressure.
Yeah, that first pick was on the first throw, I think. That didn't really work out well. I'm going to give out my Wandy to future first-round pick future NFL first-round pick quarterbacks. Jake Locker 2 weeks ago went 4-for-20 against Nebraska. Just didn't, like, you got to show up in a big game, and he just did not show up. And then this week,
Jake Locker,
right? And then this week, Ryan Mallett, he threw for 380 yards. He played a good game between the 20s, but he throws a pick in the end zone in the first half, and then at the end of the game, I was talking about how all of Arkansas collapsed against Alabama. A lot of that was on Ryan. I mean, one throw was the double coverage. They're up by 3 at that point, and all the momentum's going toward Alabama. And then he throws a pick, throws into double coverage. Alabama goes down the field and scores a go-ahead touchdown. And then Arkansas gets the ball back. He tries to throw it away, throws it off his back foot, and can't even get the ball out of bounds, and then ends up getting picked off of the safety. Or no, Kirkpatrick, their defensive back, cornerback. And so really, I mean, again, your guy who's supposed to be one of the best quarterbacks in the conference, one of the best quarterbacks in the nation, and a future NFL guy, and you got to show up in a big game like that.
Kellen Moore, they're not, that's for sure. Chang, who
big game Kellen Moore.
Who you dishing out some hate to?
My Wandy goes to Dolphins cornerback Jason Allen, who after getting two picks against Minnesota, finally came back down to earth and was the sole reason my Dolphins lost to the Jets.
That's big talk right there.
He slipped one time when Brandon Edwards caught like a hook route. He had a hook pass, and he got it and slipped, let Brandon Edwards run like 60 yards for a touchdown. And then toward the end of the game, on the last drive, he commits a pass interference penalty, which gives the Jets a new set of downs. They eventually score a touchdown. So I'll give my Wandy to Jason Allen. He sucks.
Jason Allen is so bad. He's definitely the Dan Werner of that team, because not only is he horrible, but he's been around for a while now, And it makes me wonder, like, how bad is Sean Smith, like, that he can't take over that position, you know? Like, I don't know. I'm also a Dolphins fan, so that's very upsetting.
He's a Tennessee product, right?
Yeah. Yes,
yeah, so fans who chant SEC after every game should probably watch Chase Now and play a little football.
I think Nick Saban drafted him.
Yeah, right, Nick Saban did. Yeah. He drafted him and a cornerback from LSU.
Daniels,
Travis
Daniels.
Is that right?
I think. I don't know.
Sometimes Nick Saban was really just there to implode the Dolphins and then leave.
He did a great job of that. All right, we'll move on to our major rights. Something positive to say. I'm going to go outside of football. Believe it or not, there are other things going on outside of football right now. I'm going to give it to the UF volleyball team, who is now ranked number 2 in the country in the latest AVCA poll. I think they just beat Florida State for the 19th year in a row or something ridiculous like that. They have LSU coming up, who they'll probably beat. They're not exactly a volleyball power. The only team they're behind right now is undefeated Stanford, who's always has a good team. They're actually ranked ahead of Penn State, who beat them at home earlier this year. But Penn State does have 2 losses now, so maybe that'll balance out later in the year. But Florida volleyball, number 2, this is probably their best team since you know, the Angie McGinnis, Marcy Hampton, Amber McCray. I'm probably forgetting one other player, but since those years, and they're doing it without Elise Cusack, which I'm a little surprised about.
Yeah, so. It's a little surprising because you think they're kind of be a down year after not winning the SEC for the first time in 19 years. They had to lose Elise Cusack, and lose 2 transfers, Colleen Ward and Brittany Rogers, but they're better than they were last season.
Yeah,
I think they beat Ole Miss on Sunday for the 32nd straight time, so that's a streak.
Right. Have they ever lost? Has Mary Wise ever lost to them?
Probably not. Probably.
When I got on the beat, there were like 6 teams in SEC that Mary Wise had never lost to, and she's since lost to like 2 or 3 of those teams. But
clearly not Ole Miss.
No, clearly not Ole Miss.
Okay, I'm gonna give my major to Cam Newton. Here's to you, kid. He's leading the SEC in rushing so far this year. He's doing great throwing the ball as well. I think his passing efficiency is like 2nd or 3rd in the conference. I don't know that. I think off the top of my head, I don't have that completely accurate. But he's throwing the ball well enough. And, I mean, really, he's had 2 games where he's run for more than 170 yards. And, I mean, really, it's just a good thing to see him bounce back after having such a rough exit from Florida. And just a guy who got in legal troubles and also just got taken over by John Brantley in that number 2 role here at Florida. So I'm really happy for him and glad to see he's having a good time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he feels vindicated. I don't know. It's got to be a good feeling when you get kind of, like, you have to leave one program, prove that you can play in the exact same conference that you left for, you know, for Auburn, who's a big-time program. So he's having a lot of success right now.
Expect the same from Newkeese Richardson at Hampton University.
Make a similar statement over there.
All right, my major, I'm going to give it to Florida offense coordinator Steve Adazio for finally opening up the offense. Even if it wasn't his fault, I mean, I'll just say, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. It's probably Urban Meyer for scripting those plays. After those scripted plays.
It's probably Peter Rose.
Yeah, probably. They went to Peter.
Friend of the Peter podcast, Rose. Peter Rose.
After the scripted plays, the offense went downhill a little bit. But I'll say he did a good job this week. Let's see if he keeps it up against Alabama and keeps, you know, throwing the ball on first down, throwing the ball past 5 yards. We'll see if he does that again.
I mean, I can't imagine you didn't just make history there. I don't think we've ever given Steve Adazio a positive award on this podcast before, but I mean, I don't disagree. I think he did a pretty good job, or he at least didn't do a crappy job.
Exactly.
So he didn't stand in somebody's way.
Which is he did not do a good job.
Which is great for him. That's like awesome on his standards.
Yeah, definitely. Steve Adazio really coming through. All right, so that wraps up this podcast. We came through with a Monday edition. We're going to hit you with a Thursday edition, a little Alabama preview. I'm sure there'll be tons of stuff to talk about. Obviously, this is the Gators' biggest game of the season. It's a national game. Andy Staples from SI, friend of Tom Green, was at interviews today. So you know it's a big game when Andy Staples is in the house.
Andy Staples is friends with Tom Green, the recruiting writer at the Independent Florida Alligator, not Tom Green from Freddie Got Fingered fame.
I mean, I can't confirm or deny that. So that's also in play. But yeah, we're talking about our Tom Green. As usual, send any feedback to... Where do we send feedback? podcast@alligator.org. Is that where we're sending feedback these days? You can check us out on Twitter. I am Tyler, Chang Reaction, K Maestri, McCollinit, who's not with us. You can still check him out. We didn't have Harrison to produce this one, so Lord only knows what the sound quality is going to be like. So I apologize in advance if there are any blips on the radar. But with that, we're out.
End the show, Barry.